Welcome to Dish the Dirt, a light-hearted and fun podcast about Australian flower growers, their stories, knowledge and insights into the industry. I'm your host Rebecca, and each week I speak to a different farmer and get them to dish the dirt. Dish the Dirt acknowledges the traditional custodians of the land on which we work and live, and recognise their continuing connection to land, water and community. We pay respect to elders past, present and emerging. Hello and welcome along to season 8 of Dish the Dirt, a podcast which chats to flower farmers from Australia about their stories, knowledge and insights into the flower industry. We also talk to flower farmers from around the world and have the occasional guest florist on the podcast as well. It's really all about sharing locally grown seasonal flowers and about the work that goes behind making those flowers so damn beautiful. Anyway, this week I speak to Craig Scott from East Coast Wildflowers. Craig and I actually spoke a little while ago, and this episode was meant to come out about 3 weeks ago, but unfortunately I have been away in London for work and also for family reasons, and just didn't have the time to put it together before I left. So we've got it now and it is amazing, and it was an absolute pleasure to speak to Craig about his flower farming journey and also about the Australian Wildflower Conference, which is happening this weekend in Echuca on the New South Wales Victorian border. It sounds like they have an absolutely fantastic weekend planned. I know that a lot of energy and time has gone into making this weekend really special for the people that are going. There is amazing guest speakers who have been in the industry for a very long time sharing their knowledge. There's a lot of great flower farms involved. So I wish you all the very best for the weekend, and I hope everyone going has a really, really fabulous time and comes away with some more knowledge, connections, and a bigger community. So Craig and I speak about his flower farm, East Coast Wildflowers, which was started by him and his father in 1984. And their family has been involved in the cut flower and foliage industry, either as growers or florists, for a number of generations. They live on the New South Wales Central Coast in Australia, and their main farm is at Mangrove Mountain, and they sell wholesale flowers and foliage at Sydney Flower Markets, where they have market stands and warehouse facilities. On their farm, they specialise in growing Australian flora in the field as well as in greenhouses. They have a wide range of interesting Australian wildflowers, and they aim for year-round production. East Coast Wildflowers is one of Australia's leading wholesalers specialising in Australian wildflowers and South African protea. They source cultivated flowers and foliage from most states in Australia. It was a pleasure again to speak to Craig. I think that there is so much knowledge to be gained from this episode, and I hope, like I've said, that the Wildflower Australia Conference just goes off with a bang. So let's get into it.
Is it still the same property for the fourth generation?
So that was in the Sutherland Shire, and when me and Angela got married, we asked my mum and dad if we could move up to the farm at Mangrove Mountain. They'd bought that in 1968, and Dad always had the hope that he might move up there and start growing one time, but never did. That's on the New South Wales Central Coast, so it's about 2 hours from Sutherland. Okay. So we moved up there. Dad had already started growing a few native plants in rows there, a lot of wattles and eucalyptus and some Geraldton wax and kangaroo paw. Yeah. And then when we got married, we moved up there, and we took a lot of the dahlia bulbs with us, and we started growing dahlias and asters and baby's breath, and continued planting some of the native plants.
Yeah.
But over the years, I sort of, a passion for native flowers probably grew more and more. And we slowly moved out of the traditional flowers and grew more native flowers. And in the end, I decided to stop growing dahlias and concentrate
why
on
was
native.
That? Just because you loved native flowers more and you were more hooked on that? Or was there, were they not growing well in your environment?
Yeah, we had a few issues. So it was, the farm had been used for potato growing and we were getting a lot of disease in the tubers. Rhizoctonia. I remember taking the tubers to plant pathology lab in Sydney, one of the Department of Agriculture ones, and getting them checked out. And the pathologist told me that it was rhizoctonia, couldn't do anything about it. And it was easy for him to say, but it was so heartbreaking for me, you know, like it was loss of our crops that have been in the family for years. So, yeah. I mean, they didn't all suffer badly. Some were more resilient to it. But in the end, like I decided, like, growing dahlias, we used to grow two crops. So you grow an early crop and a later crop. And so you're working for quite a long period. You start harvesting end of November and you wouldn't finish until Easter.
Yeah.
And three days a week and marketing. And there was a lot of work wiring up. And I decided that I wanted to pursue more the native flowers. But at that time, I was doing horticulture at TAFE, and Angus Stewart, who some would know from Gardening Australia and some of his books, he was my teacher and he was real passionate about native flowers. And so he's very encouraging. And I did tissue culture with him. And then Greg Lamont worked for the Department of Agriculture in Gosford, and he was doing a lot of work in native flowers and native plants, and he asked me if I'd like to come down and do some work in their tissue culture lab just one afternoon a week.
Yeah.
And so both of those guys are real mentors for me, and Greg Lamont, I'd say I'm growing Australian native flowers. And he said, well, what's the productivity like? And, you know, he'd always be questioning me, you know, what's the productivity per square meters? And so it was an interesting question and something that I tried to think about. And so I tried to start growing native flowers in the same way that we used to grow traditional flowers, the dahlias and the asters, and quite intensively. But that was a big learning curve for sure.
By intensively, what did you change with your growing techniques?
Yeah, pretty much. Like traditionally, you'd grow kangaroo paw in a single row, maybe 30 to 50 centimetres apart. So I started growing them quite intensively, some more of the smaller growing varieties, and I grow them 9 plants to a metre.
That
was quite intensive. And I found that you could get quite good productivity, but the plants would only survive so long and you'd be constantly replacing the plants. And so it was a real learning curve.
Yeah.
We've changed a lot since then, but we still do grow quite intensively.
Okay.
Paper daisies and kangaroo paw and a lot of other things.
Yeah. So how would you say that your farm has evolved over the time? What's different now to, like, very different now from when you began?
We have a few greenhouses, and we were growing in the soil in the greenhouses, and we were getting that same disease, Rhizoctonia. Between Rhizoctonia, Pythium and Phytophthora, all those soil-borne diseases were really affecting the plants.
Mm-hmm.
To a point where we couldn't continue growing them. And so we moved, and it was a big move, but we had to do something because our plant losses were too high. And we moved into pot plant production, but for cut flowers. So we set up some of the plants still grow fine in the soil, in greenhouses and outside, but the ones that are a bit trickier to grow and that I thought were profitable enough to grow in the greenhouse and in containers, we did that. We grow them in quite large containers, a pot called a citrus pot, which is, I think it's almost, it's like 10 inches by maybe 12 inches. Quite large pots. Some are growing smaller pots, but we're always trialing different things.
What do you mainly grow in though, in those conditions? What works best for you?
Yeah, the things I like to grow in the greenhouse are things that are fairly free flowering. So with the kangaroo paw, there's some of the kangaroo paw that are very seasonal and some are more free flowering. So that means they flower a bit more throughout the year. And so the ones that are free flowering, I'll grow in the greenhouse. You can get a longer stem length, better quality. You can get them flowering a little bit out of season. So through the winter months when you get quite good return and early spring. Then we also grow some of the paper daisies. So we grow a lot outside in the fields, but we grow some in the greenhouse to protect them, to just have a backup if there's damage to the crop outside. Then we also grow a lot of flannel flower.
Are you growing different varieties of flannel flower or just the one?
Well, the form that we're growing is one that was initially developed New South Wales Agriculture, and they were trialing to get a flannel flower that was growing a little bit out of season or a little bit year round. And there was so they'd made some selections, and then so we were growing some of those selections, and then we've selected off those plants. So we've got quite a few of our own selections now.
100%.
Some for bigger flowers, taller, some early flowering, late flowering. But we also grow, and this is quite exciting, is a small pink flannel flower. A lot of people would have heard about it and seen it flowering en masse in the wild after the bushfires and rain in 2020. So we'd been growing it for since about 2015, and found that we could germinate okay, and it's lovely. It doesn't last that long, so the plants will probably only last for maybe 4 to 5 months, and then they die out. So you need to continue to resow it. And so last year, I think we probably had about three or four lots of sowing to just extend that season.
So how on a plant like that, how do you make that profitable when your plants are dying out, every 4 to 5 months? Is it something that you've seen that you can make profitable, but just because it's not really supplied by anyone else?
It's a plant that everybody desires. Like it's even if it's not Even if it's not profitable for me, I'd still probably grow it. Sorry. Sorry, Greg Lamont. But I think it was profitable enough for us. You know, it's still a learning. We're still learning how to grow it. Like we created a fancy way of holding it up because it gets very tangled and it falls over the side of the pot. So we put some netting. We've put the Actually, put the plant down into this netting, just to support the flowers in it. And it's a bit of a love hate when you're picking it. It's
So how, in comparison to when you began, I know you have staff working for you. What's sort of the size of your farm now?
We grow on about 20 acres,
Okay.
and we have probably an acre and a half in greenhouse, so it's not a huge area. We're always running out of space. We're always having to cull things and try new things. Yeah.
And who do you supply to?
So I sell all my flowers through Sydney Flower Markets, our own business, East Coast Wildflowers. And we have a few stands in the market, and we have a warehouse in the market as well. I do bring flowers from all around the country, Western Australia, Victoria, Queensland, New South Wales. But so our customers are mainly Sydney florists and regional New South Wales florists, and maybe a very small percentage, like maybe 1 or 2% is general public that come in mostly on the Saturday. So at the market, our main days are Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And we're also open Tuesday and Saturday, and they're fairly quiet days.
I know the Sydney flower markets is a lot different to the Melbourne flower markets, just in terms of hours. And I think maybe the way that it operates, but what do you think that East Coast Wildflowers does really well, with your native flowers? I know that I've seen you pick like huge, big branches, and sell those at market. And I think that's quite unique. What other unique things do you think that you have?
I think the great thing about what we do is we grow a lot of seasonal native flowers, and that keeps it really interesting for the florists that come and buy. We do find that a lot of florists come in and come to our stand first, and I think it's because we have that seasonality in our flowers, and there's not always a lot of one product. And so if there's something new, it'll go pretty quick. So they'll come and they'll snazzle up what they can, and then they'll go off. They can get roses, tulips, carnations, chrysanthemums, sort of on and liliums on all the other stands. So there's no great rush there. But some of the products that we have, there is a bit of a rush because it's very seasonal.
Well, what do you think the importance of seasonality is within the flower industry?
I think it just keeps it really interesting for the florist customers as well as the florists. Like, we need to excite our florists first, and their customers can be excited too by something that's new in season. When the Waratahs bloom in September, it's like it's a Waratah season. It's so exciting. Or when it's the Christmas bell season, it's the Christmas bell. Like that's something really, really special. Yeah. And with the big branches, like, I guess we got, oh, I have, and the guys who work for me, I mean, we've been working with native flowers for so long, and we've got this real passion for it. And things like flowering eucalyptus. So we actually go and pick on a couple of people's properties, and we'll really go out of our way. We'll go all the way out to Forbes, which is central west New South Wales, and out to Grenfell to these farms, and pick the products that the people are growing, but they're not that skilled or interested in doing the harvest. And so we'll bring back from there beautiful big flowering eucalyptus, whether it's Eucalyptus macrocarpa or Rhodanthe or Silver Princess or Youngiana. And because they don't have to be transported in boxes, I can fill my truck up and trolleys and have long branches. And, I mean, it's not, I mean, florists love like a medium-sized bunch of flowering gum or anything, but they also love these big branches that they can use in their corporates or big displays, and one piece can be a showpiece on its own. And when I bring back loads like that, it can be a real frenzy. Not always. It just depends on, you know, how the market's running at the time. But when I've got some really great stuff that's chaotic on the stand, it's quite exciting. The market, yeah, the markets are, I find the market's a real exciting place. It's tough, you know, the hours are tough. Everyone's working really hard, all the wholesalers and all the florists. But, you know, there's a real vibe, and it's at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah,
it's quite exciting. If anybody gets a chance, come to Sydney markets, on, you know, particularly in spring. A lot of the florists do get in about sort of 4:30. They're not supposed to, but they do sort of sneak in a little bit. But it's quite exciting.
How did newer people in New South Wales get into the Sydney markets?
You can get a stall in Sydney markets as a casual.
Okay.
It is difficult in spring because there's not that many spots available.
Okay.
They usually try to fit everyone in and don't turn anyone away, but I think occasionally they might turn people away.
Mm-hmm.
You can, most of the year it's fine. There's plenty of stands available for casuals.
Fabulous. So what, going back to sort of the flower farming side of things, how do you minimize pests and disease within your farm?
Yeah. It can be difficult, but a lot of it, I believe, is what you're growing. So there's a lot of plants that I can't grow successfully on my farm because I'm just not in the correct region for growing that plant. Like all those flowering eucalyptus that I pick in Western New South Wales, it's not no point me trying to grow them. They'll always have disease or they won't grow. And no matter how much you try and control that disease, you won't control it. So we try and manipulate the growing environment a little bit. So as I said before, we grew in pots to overcome the issue of root-borne diseases. But even then, some of the plants that we might like to grow can't handle the humidity.
Okay.
And no matter how much spraying you do, you just can't grow them successfully. So there's certain plants that you can't grow, so you don't grow them. So minimizing pest and disease, that's it. My dad always said, like, if you see a job needing doing, you've got to do it straight away. So observation is very important. So if you see aphids starting to get out of control or something, you need to remove that plant, prune, or you might need to spray. So we try and minimize spraying. Nobody wants to spray too much, but we do spray. We try and use specific chemicals for specific problems. I guess that's some of the ways we try and control pest and disease.
Yeah, that's great. Do you try any organic methods, or you just
We do use some integrated pest management. Like, we buy in a few different bugs at different times, some for red spider, some for fungal gnats. I don't really know all of the details. Jonathan, who does a lot of our propagation, does most of that. But so we do a little bit of that, particularly in our greenhouses, not so much outside.
Yeah. And what do you think is the importance of sort of educating our newer growers and new staff coming into the industry at the moment?
Thinking about my own farm, I heard a guy at a conference one time say, he was talking about education, and he said, somebody said, oh, you educate your staff and then they leave you. And he said, well, you could not educate them and then they stay. And his point was that if you have non-educated people working for you, they're not working as best that they can.
Yeah.
So I've always felt that education is very important. I got a lot out of it. Like, you can educate your staff on the farm yourself. You can teach them the way that you're doing things. And there's a lot of learning there, and they can learn on their own things that they do wrong, things to do things better. But I think it's really important if they go to a third party and learn, you know, go to TAFE or do a course somewhere else, and they're learning from somebody else. So they don't have to adopt all of it, but they might adopt some practices that are just different, and that difference will only be a better outcome for what they're doing on the farm. I think anybody who's coming into the industry, I think it's important if they can get a bit of horticulture training, and even going to open days on farms, going to conferences, just if you pick up one or two bits of information from going to an open day or a conference, it's worthwhile. I think joining some of the grower groups is very important, you know, and try and be a bit active in those grower groups. You only learn more by doing that.
Yeah, so that gets us on to sort of Wildflowers Australia, which I know that you're a big part of. And I wanted to touch on the conference that you have happening in August of this year, which is the first since 2014, I believe. Can you run me through what's going to be happening at the conference?
Yeah, thanks. So. Well, the conference is being held in Echuca, Moama, which is on the New South Wales-Victorian border. And it's on the 18th and 19th of August. It's being organised by Wildflowers Australia. And we're pretty excited, actually, because when we started to plan it, we were really worried how it would be received. But it's been received really well. We had a lot of sponsors come on board, which was great, and we really thank those sponsors. But now we're getting a lot of people registering, and so it's meant that we've had to put on an extra bus for this Saturday farm visits. We've got a great program put in place. We've got some really good speakers. And they're all people who've been in the industry for a long time and are willing to share. So it's great.
Yeah, wonderful.
Yeah, Angus Stewart is doing the dinner speech after
lovely.
Dinner, and really looking forward to that.
Yeah, be great.
And a few of the other subjects. One of them is renewing established farms. So if you've just bought a property that's run down, you know, what do you need to do to renew it? You know, how do you get it up and running again? And another one's logistics and marketing. Another one, looking at South African proteas and flora. And then an interesting one is looking at the impact of flooding on plants and nutrition in your soils.
That's quite prevalent.
Relevant. Getting the best out of your irrigation, pest and disease management, microflora in your soils. And in the afternoon, we're running a split session. So for those who are sort of new growers or even interested in getting started in couple hour growing, we're running a getting started program for a couple of hours. So yeah, that's just a bit of a rundown. And then on the Saturday, we're doing the bus tours. to a couple of the local farms.
Who are you going to see on those farms? Does it say
on those farms? One of the farms is Sandy Hill Banksia, which if some of your listeners will know, Michael, who has Bush, the florist in Victoria, in Melbourne. That's his farm. And Zoe and her father run a eucalyptus property in Gumbawa, a lot of flowering eucalyptus and foliage. So that'll be quite exciting. But because we had to put on an extra bus, we've had to bring in a new farmer. The third one is Marilyn. She's down at Bendigo, and she produces a lot of native cut flowers. It's not really a farm as say. She's a propagator, great propagator of native plants. And she's got this amazing garden that she harvests from. And I know Bush in Melbourne gets a lot of that product, but she's got so many different varieties. So it'll be very exciting to, well, I've been there a couple of times, but to see the different native plants that she's got growing there is something special. Unfortunately, not everybody will get to go there, but we'll just have to see. We'll organise that on the day.
Yeah, great. Yeah, it sounds absolutely fantastic. What do you think is the most important thing about holding days?
I think the industry getting together is great.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned before, you only need to learn one or two things to make, you know, all the cost of going and the time away, making it worthwhile.
Yeah.
The contacts that you meet, it's people that you can phone up at a later date and ask if you got a problem, or you can ask a question, or if you want to know something, or can I get some seed off you, or where did you get that plant, or you know, like just making those contacts is very important.
Yeah.
And also the knowledge that you can learn is great. I remember one of the very first national conferences I went to, I think it was one of the guys from Tesla's was speaking, and I can't remember who it was now, but he said, what two crops on your plantation are going to be the standout crops for you? You know, what are you going to be known for? And I was sitting there at the time, I think, what's it going to be? What's going to be? And I wrote in my notepad, I wrote kangaroo, KP and PD, kangaroo paw and paper daisies. And like, this is 35 years later, that's a big focus of what we do.
Yeah.
So it's just those little bits of information that, yeah, help you to focus. And it's just very worthwhile, I believe.
Yeah, definitely. I think it helps to build that community and can only make the industry stronger for everyone, days like this. All of that knowledge that everyone gets to share, it's so exciting. So just going back to kind of the flower industry, what do you see the next 10 years being like for us, and what would you say is the most important thing that we do now to make our industry stronger?
Okay. I find our industry is very resilient and steadfast. As everybody found out through COVID, we were so worried about where we were going to end up, and it just went from strength to strength. I think the industry has expanded a little bit in the last couple of years because of the success through that time in COVID, and I feel that there's still a bit more expansion to go. People love flowers. Doesn't mean that there won't be a time when it's hard for people to buy flowers. But we've always seemed to have done fairly well through recessions. So I guess as long as we don't price ourselves out of the market, we should be okay.
Do you think that anyone needs to be focusing on the increase in temperatures and how that maybe farming is potentially going to shift over the next sort of 5 to 10 years? Do you think there needs to be more education around perhaps being a bit more sustainable or thinking about how we're farming?
I think we do definitely need to be thinking about how we're farming and to try and farm more sustainably. I was just in New Zealand and I was down near Napier and the destruction there after the severe flooding that they had, and that wasn't even the worst area hit. And a lot of it was because of land clearing and forestry and so much silt was washed down. So we do really need to consider how we farm and what products we're using in the flower industry as well. Like we have used a lot of plastics in the past in our sleeves. So it's something that we do need to really consider how to minimize the use of plastics. I was talking to a young guy in the markets the other day, Jack Nadai, and he's worked, put a bit of effort into trying to develop a new sleeve that's been produced by recycled plastics, and he's come up with something. It's taken him a fair while, and he's really keen to see the market clean itself up and move forward. And I said, oh, should we get together and think of different ways that we can improve the market and sustainability within the market. I said, I'd love to do that. So, there's some young people involved who are really keen. And one of the things we were talking about, this is a bit off the track to your question, but was whether we could do a composting scheme, even at the markets, where the florist would bring back their waste, their organic waste, and we put it through an industrial composting scheme at the markets, and then it goes back out to the farms. So it was just interesting to have that discussion with him, and whether it's possible to do that or not, I don't know, but it's exciting that he's really keen on looking at how we can improve the way that we do things. So I think on the farms, it's the same. I'm not sure, like with global warming and temperature rises, it's really hard for me to get a picture of what that'll mean, and how that will affect what we're doing. But we do need to try and minimize our waste and reuse our solutions that are running through our pots and try and reuse that wastewater.
How do you reuse your wastewater on the farm?
At the moment, it's fairly crude. We collect it in tanks at the end of the greenhouses, and then I just pump it out onto another crop, sort of a row crop. So it's sort of getting a second use, but it's probably not the best, but that's one way. And then we're trying to set up a wetland at the end of another area that we've got for large pots. So that's a bit of a work in progress, but we've got we're going to set up that wetland. We've got the plastic. Oh, we got yeah we've got the holes dug and the film to go in to it and plants that we're going to put into it, but we haven't done it yet.
What your biggest piece of knowledge is for people coming into the industry or people who are in the industry, what could you share with them?
Yeah. Anybody new coming into the industry, I always suggest that if they can, get to the flower markets and have a look at what's being sold and how it's being sold, how it's being presented. Try and talk to some of the growers and wholesalers. So they can see what's expected in the industry. My dad always would say presentation is the most important thing, and so presenting your products, the way you bunch them, the way you display them when you're trying to sell them, yeah, that's an important thing.
And what three things, I always ask everyone this, what three things would you take if you had to leave the farm quickly? Sort of farming related.
Yeah,
Most people would take their family, definitely. I get that.
no, I was thinking about this question, and what kept coming back to me was, like I could take my diamond sharpener or my electric secateurs, probably the greatest thing that I would want to take and keep with me is all the memories over the years of the different people who have worked on the farm, family growing up on the farm, my father and my grandfather coming up to the farm. All those memories are so important. We've been so lucky to be involved in this industry and to grow wonderful wildflowers. There's so many beautiful plants, and so those memories to me are very important. So I guess that's the big thing that I would like to take. It's a little bit different to maybe what I should have answered, but that's what kept coming back to me.
There's no right or wrong. Is there one flower that holds a very special memory for you?
There's never one flower, but a special one though is Actinotus minor. That's the mini flannel flower, not the pink one, but the white one that grows locally in our area. And I picked it for my wife, and she wore it in her hair when we got married. So it's something that'll always be a very special flower for both of us.
One thing that I haven't touched on, which I learned from you when I met you at the Industry Day in New South Wales, was the importance of cultivation of wildflowers versus the harvest of wildflowers. And I know you were saying up in New South Wales that a lot of wild flannel flower gets picked and sold versus flannel flower that's actually being cultivated. Could you just touch on that quickly? Because I think that's something I personally had no idea about. And I'm sure lots of florists probably don't. So, yeah, what's the importance of cultivating versus the harvest of wildflowers?
Yeah. Well, just firstly, there's so many beautiful wildflower regions throughout the world, and a lot of them are being lost, whether it's through land clearing for farming or just housing. I remember there was Planifordia nobilis, a small Christmas bell, beautiful area of them growing in the Sutherland Shire, and it's all lost to housing now. So that's a different thing to think about. But harvest from the wild, if it's done sustainably within the laws that are around, picking from your wild plantation on your property, or if you've got licenses for forestry areas, and it's done sustainably, I think that's fine. But there's a lot of wild harvest that goes on that's illegal, and a lot of that product may not even be sold in Sydney. It might get shipped to Adelaide or to Melbourne, particularly flannel flowers. Some of it is sold in Sydney as well, but so I think it's important that we encourage the cultivation of these crops, flannel flowers, and they're not easy to grow, but they can be grown, and they can be grown very successfully, and the product that's produced will be far better than the product that's harvested from the wild as well. So I guess just be aware, that some of it is illegally wild harvest. And
Yeah.
if you want to have that, make that conscious decision that you don't want to be involved in that illegal wild harvest, then
Yeah.
don't buy that product. But,
Yeah. Yeah. It's really such a great piece of knowledge for people to for you to share with people, because like I said, I had sort of no idea, and it's another one of those things that's one of the pieces of information that I took away from Industry Day. So I hope everyone going along to the Wildflowers Australia conference will gain pieces of gems like that, but also a lot more, I'm sure. And I just want to thank you so much for your time today and for being part of Dish the Dirt. And I hope everything goes really well for Industry Day. Is that for the conference, I mean, is there anything else that you wanted to share that I haven't asked you about?
I thought I'll just run through a quick list of some of the native flowers that we're really interested in at the moment, and people
Yeah,
might want
great.
to pick up on a couple of them. So this, I was actually thinking about this, about your question of 10, what would you like to see in 10 years and all the rest. And I'd love to see some of these varieties being grown more as crops in our industry. They're wonderful. There are a few wonderful wildflowers
Yeah.
that we're just trialing at the moment. So they'll just be botanical names, and I might not get the
Okay.
pronunciation correct, but so Watazi is one of the paper daisies. Conostylus is a another one. Daisy Mallor, Dipolina, Ajuga, Conostylus, many of the Thai lotus, mullamullas, Angianthus, and Ceriloptrum, and of course, Rottnest Island Daisy Trachymene. It's been around for a long time, but it's a great one. So if anybody could figure out what I just said, they might want to look some of those up and maybe try some of them.
Yeah, fabulous. How would they get hold of those? Like, if they were wanting to start to try to grow, where would be the best place for them to get
Yeah,
hold of
some of
some
the
of them?
native nurseries do have them, and then you might need to order them or do your own propagation from them.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, if anybody comes to the conference, can sort of talk to them about it a little bit more,
Yeah, lovely.
or people could contact me, or we don't have supply of the plants, but yeah, it's just a few things that we're playing with at the moment that are quite interesting.
Yeah, great. And just on these sort of varieties, are they, I was thinking about this before, was the kangaroo paw. How do you compete with imported kangaroo paw? And are any of these sort of new flowers able to be imported, or is it just, are they only,
Yeah.
grown in Australia?
Well, with the kangaroo paw question first, like
Yeah.
there's a lot of imported kangaroo paw in the market in the last couple of months, and I it's the quality is just not there. So like it
Yeah.
just doesn't transport well. It's we're still growing and selling kangaroo paw at the moment, but only very small numbers, and it's very tempting to go and fill your orders by buying the imported one and put it in, but I won't do it. It's just the quality is just not there. So I do say to people that they can buy that the imported ones if they really need to, but just be aware that the quality is not there. So once ours gets into full swing, they'll stop bringing in the imported ones in, I guess.
Okay, yeah, great.
And yeah, I was a bit disappointed about a year or so ago when they started selling some of the paper daisies that we grow, Halyptrum manglesii. We call it silver bells. And I'd seen it on a Chinese Instagram page. And I thought, oh, I hope that doesn't come into the country. And I looked at it and I thought, oh, it's not on the import list. It shouldn't come in. Next thing, a whole lot got brought in and I was so disappointed. And apparently they could bring it in under a special permit. So I was very disappointed, but the quality of it isn't quite the same as ours. But in saying that, we also don't have enough product. Like we grow a lot and then we figure we'll grow a lot and dry a lot that'll get us through the year. And we always sell out quite quickly. And this year we've had a bad growing season for it. And we're not going to have as much this year. So yeah, it is a bit disappointing to see some of those things get brought in. But a lot of the things that I did just mention are very, at the moment, they're quite very niche things and they're proving to be very popular when like my daughter Bess at Paddington, she sort of gets everything first up and she's loving to use a lot of them. And I had some other spare the other day and another florist was using them and focus them on their Instagram as well. So like all of these products have a place, that's for sure.
Amazing. Well, thank you again for coming on and sharing all your knowledge with us and your stories of how you started on the farm. And I hope anyone going along to the conference has a really great time. It's so amazing to have something like this happening in the industry again. So thank you.
Yeah, no, thanks, Meg. Thanks for the opportunity to have a chat.
What a fabulous episode. I really loved that Craig wanted to take away all of his memories from the flower farm with him if he ever had to leave. Such a beautiful thing to have had all four generations on your flower farm and to also have all of those special, special, wonderful memories to cherish from all the years. Thank you for sharing your knowledge with us. It is such a fabulous episode. If you're wanting to know any more, please get in touch with Craig about those varieties that he mentioned at the end of the episode. I'm sure if you went to the Wildflowers Australia conference over the weekend or if you're heading there, perhaps take some notes and you can ask Craig about them in person when you see him. I know he'll be speaking there this weekend along with a raft of other amazing industry people. So until next time, the next episode will be out in a few weeks when I get back onto Australian soil and we have Alan from Botany Florist with us, which is a really great episode. Ellen speaks all about her sustainable practices within her business. Thank you again for joining me on Dish the Dirt. It really is a privilege to be able to record with these wonderful flower farmers and to be able to share their stories, knowledge, and insights into the industry. Until next time, keep being blooming fabulous.